Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel once more. Anyway, I'm commenting on a quarter century since the Omar bomb went off. I'll never forget that evening. I was having a barbecue in a friend's garden, and something came through the news. A bomb had gone off in Northern Ireland, killed a few people. Now, people a generation younger than me won't realise what it was like in the 90s, even the 80s, where bombings were kind of a weekly occurrence and just shrugged it off. I know it seems callous now, but obviously didn't realize just how high the death toll was going to be, but was inured to it. If a bomb goes off in a country and kills some people the first time, you're horrified. When you heard it 100 times before, you just slough it off. You reach fatigue level. There's a sort of saturation that sets in with this. But anyway, it became clear that actually this was the bloodiest incident in the Troubles. And by a cruel irony, it came just a few months after the Good Friday Agreement was signed. So that April 1998 agreement had been signed in Belfast. It's officially called the Belfast Agreement between nationalists, unionists, Her Majesty's government, the Irish government. So at the SDLP, the voice of constitutional nationalism, Sinn Féin, which was really the IRA with the balaclava off. And then the major unionist party, the Ulster Unionist Party, and it's very small now, the DUP refused to sign. And then some of the parties which were just the face of loyalist terrorist outfits, namely the Ulster Democratic Party and the Progressive Unionist Party. And that was it. I won't go into the particulars of that agreement, but it was really questionable about whether the peace would hold. So it was a festive day. It was a Saturday, if memory serves. Now, there was some a faction split off the IRA. They call themselves the Real IRA, who refused to accept the Good Friday Agreement. The Provisional IRA, that's the major faction, the IRA, they were aligned with Sinn Féin. They often said Provisional Sinn Féin for their political party. And they said, okay, they signaled their acceptance of the Good Friday Agreement. They would try and bring about a 32-county republic through exclusively peaceful democratic means. Well, it wasn't quite true. They carried on with low-level violence of about 10 years after that. They seldom murdered people. But the Real IRA, the conflict was still going on. Absolutely not. And I was a bit surprised because they'd had a referendum in June 1998. And in Northern Ireland, it's about 70% of people voted yes to the Good Friday Agreement. In the Republic of Ireland, about 95% of people voted yes. So that was the whole of Ireland voting on the same day, on the same issue. And you had to accept or reject the agreement in its entirety. You couldn't cherry pick, accept this clause and reject that clause. So that meant that people who voted yes, often they were accepting bits they disliked as well as bits they liked. So those who voted no were in the north were almost exclusively unionists. But even they would have liked bits of the agreement they're voting against, saying Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. It shall always remain so unless a majority of people in Northern Ireland vote for it to leave the UK and fuse with the Republic of Ireland. And that was the main thing. The unionists had won. But, I mean, they often don't recognise what a great success this was for them. But it was bringing back devolution at Stormont, to Northern Ireland Assembly, with an executive. But it forced power sharing under the Donald formula, where nationalists and unionists would share office. There'd be a first minister from the major community and a deputy first minister from the minor community and so forth. That was another thing that you could put to these dissident Republicans, as in to people who said, no, we will not accept this agreement. Northern Ireland is part of Ireland and that's it. And the British Army has no right to be here. Say, but wait a second, the people of Ireland accepted this. The whole of Ireland voted on one day and they accepted partition. Partition is, in fact, wildly popular. If you look at it on an all-Ireland basis, it would be something like 85% of people voted for this. And those who voted against were almost entirely unionists. And I was surprised that the Real IRA didn't kill somebody or set off a bomb, even if it wasn't going to kill anybody, on the day of the Good Friday Agreement, because nationalists in the north were mostly going to vote yes. Unionists were more or less evenly split. But if you killed somebody or if you set off a bomb, then the waverers and the unionists were more likely to go for the no camp, saying this is some sort of a surrender to terrorism if they vote yes. But they didn't do that. So it was much smaller than the Provisional IRA, the Real IRA. So they put their bomb there in a car on Market Street in Omagh. Now, they used to phone through these warnings saying this is the bomb, evacuate, give people half an hour to get out of there, not give people too much because then the army could come in and defuse it. So it was in a Vauxhall Cavalier car, which had been stolen in the County Monaghan sometime before, using a recognized code word, because otherwise any joker could pull hoaxes and they're evacuating streets all the time, and you just simply can't respond to anyone who says that, because there's some crazies who are going to call in bomb threats when there is no bomb threat, and then you wouldn't know when to take them seriously. But they called, I think, to a radio station or a television station, and they said something like Main Street. Now, there is no street called Main Street in Omagh, but they presumably meant Lower Market Street. They called Ulster Television, and there was this garbled warning, and so the evacuation didn't go ahead properly. The information was handed to the Royal Ulster Constabulary. That was the police in Northern Ireland. So they started to clear things, but after they'd cleared people into the wrong place because they didn't actually know which street it was in. It was a very crowded day. There was some sort of fair on. There were some Spanish pupils who'd been at some summer school in Donegal had crossed the border because it's in County Tyrone, and Tyrone is adjacent to Donegal, which is the Republic of Ireland. Anyway, so the bomb went off and some people were killed instantaneously. Some people succumbed to their injuries later on because it was about 3:10 in the afternoon. And then the local hospital, Erne Hospital in Fermanagh, and Tyrone County Hospital were inundated. And some of there was not enough room in the morgue. Some of them had to go to Lissanelli Barracks as well. And hundreds of people were injured. Some of them had life-changing injuries. Some of them actually quite mild. It's also a Catholic-majority town. So 18 Catholics, 10 Protestants, and one Mormon, as a kind of a Protestant, I suppose, died as a result of the blast. Two of the Catholic people were those Spanish tourists. Anyway, Her Britannic Majesty visited Omagh to express her condolences a week later and so on. So it was roundly condemned. Martin McGuinness of Sinn Féin, who'd obviously been one of the worst criminals of the Troubles, he visited Omagh to suggest that the Provisional IRA was unrelated to this crime. And actually, for once, he's telling the truth. And it might well have scuppered the peace process. It sort of played into the hands of the loyalist terrorists, because there were some rejections on their side as well, the Loyalist Volunteer Force, the LVF. But there was massive public pressure against the real IRA. They had their office and their political party. I think it was the 32 County Sovereignty Committee, which is surrounded by a baying mob in Donegal. In Dundalk, County Louth, just after that. That's the sort of first town into the Republic if you cross over on that main Belfast Dublin road. And more counter-terrorist legislation was introduced. Tony Blair made a totally dishonest and unenforceable promise that the perpetrators would be apprehended, and of course they weren't. Now, Slab Murphy, who was one of the IRA's head honchos in the border, this reclusive farmer who did very well getting EU grants and smuggling and so on, he was found civilly liable for this and got some had to pay out some huge sum of money. Gerard Adams, who was chief of staff of the IRA in the mid-1980s, president of Sinn Féin for about 25 years, he said, well, that he thought that, Slab Murphy was just a quiet farmer, was a good Republican, never done a deed wrong in his life. Now, Gerard Adams isn't that stupid. Anyway, John Hume, who was a very honourable and decent man, he said there were undiluted fascists who did this. And Martin McGuinness was correct when he said that people who did this were opposed to the peace process. They wanted to carry on the conflict. So more legislation was introduced. One of the children was killed had written a poem some months before called The Bridge of Hope. And then an album was released to raise money for the survivors, to promote the cause of peace and reconciliation. And Liam Neeson is an actor. He's from Northern Ireland, from County Derry, is it Limavady, Coleraine. And he famously declaimed this on the album, which I've got. So that was, it was a cause célèbre, but largely forgotten now. And people, dissident Republicans today would say, I remember them saying, oh, so long as the British Army's here, there'll always be bloody Sundays. Well, actually, that was over 50 years ago. There's never been any incident even remotely approaching that carried out by the Crown Forces since. Whereas there's a larger number of people were killed at the Omagh bombing much more recently, the selective amnesia. So keep watching the channel. Thanks. Goodbye.